Penguin Random House Audio presents Caucasia by Danzy Senna. Read for you by January Lavoie. A long time ago, I disappeared. One day I was here, the next I was gone. It happened as quickly as all that. One day I was playing schoolgirl games with my sister and our friends in a Roxbury playground. The next, I was a nobody, just a body without a name or a history, sitting beside my mother in the front seat of our car, moving forward on the highway, not stopping. And when I stopped being nobody, I would become white. White as my skin, hair, bones allowed. My body would fill in the blanks, tell me who I should become, and I would let it speak for me. This was back when Boston still came in black and white, yellowing around the edges. You could just make out the beginnings of color. Red-eyed teenagers with afros like halos around their faces, whispering something about power and au fait to one another as they shuffled to catch the bus. A man's mocha hand on a woman's pale knee. I disappeared into America, the easiest place to get lost. Dropped off, without a name, without a record, with only the body I traveled in, and a memory of something lost. This is what I remember. Negritude for Beginners. Face. Before I ever saw myself, I saw my sister. When I was still too small for mirrors, I saw her as the reflection that proved my own existence. Back then, I was content to see only Cole, 3 years older than me, and imagine that her face, cinnamon-skinned, curly-haired, serious, was my own. It was her face above me always, waving toys at me, cooing at me, whispering to me, pinching me when she was angry and I was the easiest target. That face was me, and I was that face, and that was how the story went. In those days, I rotated around Cole. Everything was her. I obeyed her, performed for her, followed her, studied her the way little sisters do. We were rarely far apart. We even spoke our own language. Cole insists that it began before I was born, when I was just a translucent ball in my mother's womb. Cole would lean her high forehead down to the pale balloon of our mother's belly and tell me secrets with her three-year-old gibberish genius, all the while using her figure to trace a kind of invisible hieroglyphics against our mother's swollen flesh. Cole believed I must be lonely in there, frightened of the dark, and that her voice and scribblings would soothe me. Later, we perfected the language in our attic bedroom in the brownstone on Columbus Avenue. Up there, amid the dust and stuffed animals, Cole whispered stories, one-liners, riddles to me to help me fall asleep. It was a complicated language, impossible for outsiders to pick up. No verb tenses, no pronouns, just words, floating outside time and space without owner or direction. Attempting to understand our chatter, my mother said, was like trying to eavesdrop on someone sleep-talking when the words are still untranslated from their dream state. Achingly familiar, but just beyond one's grasp. My father described the language as high-speed patois. Cole and I just called it elemento, after our favorite letters in the alphabet. My grandmother wanted us to see a child psychiatrist. She said it was my mother's fault for teaching us at home in isolation, around the dyslexic kids who were my mother's specialty. My grandmother said we must have spent too much time around those backwards children, and that was why we spoke in tongues. My father also blamed my mother for raising us in that kind of chaos. He said we were suffering from a profound indifference to the world around us. My mother said they were both full of shit and left Cole and me alone in the little world we had created. Our world was the attic. Up there, we performed for each other with the costumes that were stuffed in a trunk at the end of the bed. The attic had a crooked and creaking floor, a slanted roof so low that grown-ups had to hunch over when they came up there to visit, and a
Sample complete. Ready to continue?